Another issue that struck me during the Karnataka malnutrition discussion was the question of what one should eat. So there was a survey of families of children who had severe and acute malnutrition, SAM, and I helped compile the data along with some community organizations. So many mothers, when asked how they felt, revealed such tales of woe. One woman said, "I took my child to the doctor, and he said I should feed my child vegetables, spinach, fruits, milk. How can I buy this with my pitiful income? Doesn't he understand this? Does he think I'm a fool? So I listen quietly, take the tonic and go home. What do I do?" Conventional wisdom and nutrition science says that cereals and pulses are not sufficient for nutrition. One needs high-value foods such as fruits and vegetables, milk, eggs and meat. As nutrition science develops further, more things are discovered. Antioxidants, micronutrient deficiencies, the question of whether cholesterol is an enemy or a friend, and so on. But what nutrition science already considers known and wisdom has been implemented across the world with disastrous consequences. Now, what if this doctor had told the woman to feed her child moringa? Moringa fruit and leaves are locally grown, they're more affordable, and they're amazingly nutritious. What about ragi or finger millet? It is again a local food and it's the powerhouse of nutrition. If this woman takes her child to a government facility, most likely she would be fed some form of RUTF, ready-to-use therapeutic food, which is basically groundnut paste. Now, why not tell this woman to feed her child groundnut paste in the first place? But what doctors learn about nutrition is that cereals are a source of carbohydrates, pulses are a source of protein, and so on. But look at ragi. Does it fit into these meat boxes? So coming to the present, the region of India that I am in right now is called Awadh, and this is part of the Upper Gangetic Plain. Awadh includes Lucknow city and is famed for its culture, speech and poetry. So even the curses here sound sweet. There have been settlements and agriculture here for thousands of years. If you read any general article about this region, they'll talk about the traditional foods here being roti or flatbread made of wheat, vegetables such as potatoes cooked in tomato gravy, chole, which is chickpea, or chicken biryani or other meat preparations. But this was occasional food of the people, even of the elites. I am currently part of a research team that is looking at the links between farming, food and nutrition here. What we have discovered is that even 40 to 50 years ago, people consumed very little wheat. Instead, they ate barley, pearl millet, barnyard, foxtail and other minor millets, red rice, 10 to 15 different types of pulses, vegetables grown on their thatched roofs, fruits and flowers collected from common lands or from forests, milk and milk products from their cattle, small animals such as hares or even deer, fish from lakes and streams, and greens that grew uncultivated in their fields along with their main crop. Thus, these communities were part hunter-gatherers and had an amazingly diverse and nutritious diet. They did face periods of hunger and deprivation. Sometimes they borrowed food grains at exploitative rates, ate boiled tree bark, or went hungry. But as one woman told me, whatever we could eat, we ate. Today, their diets have been reduced to tea, wheat rotis, potato curry, and white rice. Pulses are consumed once or twice a week, vegetables when they can afford it, and meat or fish occasionally. They have much fewer cattle than before, and almost all the milk is sold to collection centers, which are present in almost every village. And this milk goes to a regional dairy, which then packages this milk and sells it. These families sell what few nutritious foods they grow, such as sesame and groundnuts, and then they buy cheap food from the market. Various studies have shown that just accounting for their cereal and pulse consumption, people's diets had more calories, protein, iron, and calcium. So why was India labeled as a nation on the brink of starvation in the 60s? I think this is yet another example of a tool or a fix in search of a problem, like big data or cracking the genome code. In the 1960s, India needed to be a starving country with a population on the brink of explosion for Western powers to exhibit their benevolence and expand their market, first for grain and then green revolution technology. Richa Kumar, who is leading our research study, has written an insightful article about this. Please do read it. So by the 80s and 90s, dwarf varieties of wheat and paddy, which were promoted by the Green Revolution, were dominant in India. These require a package of chemical inputs and irrigation, which has led to a breakdown of the ecological cycle. So land was linked to animals, forests, and water bodies. And now this link is broken. The new grain varieties are also less nutritious. People now have more money in hand because the economy has become more cash-driven. And so they could buy more nutritious food with this money, right? But what is available in villages? Packaged foods, soft drinks, interesting non-food items. People are now spending more on clothes, mobile, travel. The subsidized food grains that they eat fill their stomachs but do little else. So to conclude, the political factors in nutrition also include caste divides. The refined, less nutritious foods were mainly consumed by the elite, and these were considered Indian food, and they were reflected in policy. These were aspirational food for the rest of the people. Now, even measurement of food intake was biased. What you know or think is important as what you record, and you ignore everything else. Nutrition science, with its incomplete understanding, was used to drive policy and develop food security schemes. And even well-designed schemes have not been allowed to function due to both corruption and reduced interest of the state in social security schemes. Of course, there are people and organizations in India and worldwide trying to reverse these trends. It's hard going, but we have to change our path. Climate change is accelerating this move, but I don't know if it is enough. A radical reorganization of food and nutrition wisdom is the need of the hour.